I think we should reflect on whether we can extradite faster. I think Theresa May, the Home Secretary, did a brilliant job.
It took 10 years, didn't it?
Well, altogether? Absolutely. It took 10 years, but Abu Hamza off to America, and of course Abu Qatada deported to Jordan. We have made progress in a way no government before us has made progress. And we should be clear that we got a good domestic record in terms of prosecuting and convicting people who are guilty of terrorist offences here in Britain. Several hundred over recent years have been prosecuted, convicted and imprisoned. And every year since I've been Prime Minister, our security services and police have managed to prevent at least one major plot that could have done untold damage to our country and the people who live here. So we shouldn't talk ourselves down, and we do have independent prosecuting authorities who make the ultimate decisions.
But it's not right, is it, that somebody should be able to hold out here for 10 years?
No, as I say, I think speeding up extradition and speeding up deportation, I think we need to look at the avenues of appeal that there are and make sure that those are gone through more quickly, and we have made changes there. Obviously, we also need to look, as I've said many times, at the European Convention on Human Rights and the position that we've got to get into, where if someone threatens our country, we should be able to deport them if they have no right to be here. And that is absolutely essential that we restore that. We've taken some big steps, but I plan to take more steps if I'm elected as a Conservative Prime Minister after the next election.
All right, well, you'll have to other things to worry about as well then, like the property market. Mark Carney, as I said, described it as the biggest risk to financial stability. Do you agree with him?
Well, I agree with everything he said in his interview. I think he's doing an excellent job as Governor of the Bank of England. The economy is recovering. We're creating jobs. We've got 1.7 million more private sector jobs in this country since I became Prime Minister. But it's absolutely right that we are alert to any dangers and problems. And this government hasn't just talked about that. We've actually given to the Bank of England and the Financial Policy Committee the tools and the responsibility to call out any problems in our economy, any bubbles in our economy, and to act on them. And Mark Carney has all those powers at his disposal.
And one of the things he clearly wants you to act on, or at least think about, is the Help to Buy scheme. We have to be vigilant, he said, because it could grow a lot and change attitudes in other parts of the country, in other parts of the market. Have you given thought to that? And do you reckon, a lot of people say that the £600,000 threshold for it is too high, do you reckon that that is maybe right? Maybe you should cut it?
Well, first of all, we have specifically asked Mark Carney to examine Help to Buy and to advise us if any changes are needed. We should be clear about what he said in his interview. He said it was a small and well-targeted scheme, and I think we should also be clear about why we have the Help to Buy scheme. I was very struck by the amount of people I met who had good jobs, who were earning, working hard, but because they didn't have rich parents, they couldn't afford a deposit on a flat or a house, but they could afford mortgage payments. And the failing of the banking and the building society system because of the crash was letting them down. So it was right to help people. And when you look at the figures, I think this is very interesting, that the average property price bought under Help to Buy is something like £160,000. 85% of the purchases are outside London
and the
South
East. So I have a £600,000 cap then. Why not reduce it?
What we did was we put in place a scheme that was simple, that could get going quickly, that could make a difference to young people and others wanting to get on the housing ladder who could afford mortgage payments.
But will you consider bringing it down, cutting it?
Of course. We will consider any changes that are proposed by Mark Carney.
Right.
But as he said, this is a well-targeted scheme and it's helped tens of thousands of people to get on the housing ladder and to have mortgages. Let's be clear, these are people who want to own a flat or house of their own. They can afford a mortgage and they can afford those mortgage payments even if interest rates were to change.
Right.
What they weren't able to do was to get together the big deposit that was required because they were only able to get a 60 or 70% mortgage.
But the thing that is stopping people from being able to get the house or the flat that they want is that we are not building enough of them. You acknowledge that, and we can't build houses without planning permission. And your problem is, the government's problem, our problem, is that too many Tory councils who are, let's use the word, it's a cliche, NIMBYs, are turning down schemes that would help more houses to be built, that would enable more houses to be built.
I don't accept that.
Well,
as a government, we have radically changed the planning system because we know, as you've said, that more houses need to be built. So we've introduced the National Planning Policy Framework. We got rid of thousands of pages of guidance and replaced it with just 50. We're putting in place these changes. The planning applications are going up. House building is going up. The 20 23% increase in the number of houses built.
It's the case that Tory councils are turning the... I'll give you a list if you want. I've got it long as your arm here, but you'll know them as well as I do. Amber Valley and Harrogate Borough Council, and so on.
We have a locally driven planning system where the first decision is made by the local district council. If I take my own district council, controlled by the Conservatives in West Oxfordshire, it makes its decisions. But actually, we've been building in West Oxfordshire more houses than was actually set out under our plan. So I don't accept that all these councils are NIMBYs. And one thing we have changed in government is the new homes bonus. So councils actually get an advantage if they agree to more houses being built. I think for many years in this country, there was nothing in it for the local authorities to say yes to housing. There wasn't much in it for local authorities to encourage business to their areas as well. And so what we've created is a system where actually there are benefits from houses being built and businesses coming to your area.
Some places where that message hasn't got across. Are you, in this sense, if in no other, a Thatcherite? She regarded the right to own your own home, not rent it, to own your own home, almost a sort of sacred right, not just a matter of policy. Are you with her on that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it wasn't just Margaret Thatcher. It was something that Conservative leaders...
She made it happen.
Yeah, but since the Second World War, Conservative leaders have always believed in a property-owning democracy. I think the introduction of the right to buy and those discounts Margaret Thatcher introduced were incredibly important in our country. And I've tried to relight the right to buy fire, as it were.
So you'll have failed. If people cannot have their own home with their key to the door that they own, you will have failed.
I want to see more people buy and own their homes. It is a very natural instinct. I think all of us, I can remember the moment I walked through the door of the first flat I bought and the pride that you feel and you sense that it's your own and you can develop and improve it. It's a deep, natural human instinct, and I fully support it. And that's what the Help to Buy scheme is all about. That's what putting rocket boosters under right to buy so that people can buy their council flat or housing association flat. That's what that is all about.
All right.
Now, it's been very challenging in recent years because we had the appalling boom and bust and crash, and the banks have been taking time to recover. So it's been difficult for people to get the loans they need. But all of this, like the rest of the economy, is mending, and people are now able to get those loans buy those flats.
Let's talk about Europe. There is going to be a referendum. People should be in no doubt. You have said that I will not become Prime Minister unless I can guarantee we'll hold that referendum. And we will hold that referendum. Let's be absolutely clear about that, Mr. Cameron. No ifs, ands or buts.
By the end of 2017.
By the end of
2017. An in-out referendum.
An
not
in-out
a referendum on a treaty, but an in-out
an
referendum.
An in-out referendum, come what may, whether you succeed in your renegotiations
Correct.
Gloriously or fail abysmally,
Correct.
There will be an in-out referendum. Right. Now, given that fact, why do you think it is that it seems not to have got across to people in this sense? Those who were supporting UKIP, Nigel Farage in particular, because of his stand on Europe, you would have expected them, wouldn't you, to say, oh, right, well, the Tories are going to do it as well now, so we don't need UKIP. The fact is, they haven't done that. What's going on there?
Well, I think, first of all, we've been through a very difficult recession in Britain. It's hurt many families up and down our country. People are also frustrated over issues like immigration, where they want
more progress.
So they
don't like you generally.
No, I think, look, inevitably, in a set of elections, people want to send some messages to the government about issues they are frustrated about. And frankly, I don't only share those frustrations, I'm acting on them. We are the only party in this election that's got a clear plan for dealing with immigration, for reforming our relationship with Europe, for keeping our economy on track. And I'm going to use every hour there is between now and Thursday to keep campaigning
on
those issues.
Yeah, but my question is, why is that support sticking to Farage, to Mr. Farage and UKIP, in spite of this pledge that theoretically should have shot his fox?
Well, I think in many ways, of course, the referendum pledge will have its greatest relevance at the time of the next election, when people will be choosing. Do you want to have the Conservatives, David Cameron, continuing in office with a long-term economic plan that's turning the country round and an in-out referendum? Do you want those things? Or do you want Labour that will tax, spend and borrow? Or do you want to, you know, vote for another party that could risk not having the long-term economic plan and the referendum?
It's just a protest vote, really. you're hoping that the Farage thing, the Farage phenomenon, if you can call it that, is just a protest vote.
I take every election incredibly seriously, and I've campaigned very hard in these European elections because I passionately believe that it's only the Conservatives that have actually got a plan for how we get our relationship in Europe right. I mean, Labour and the Liberals see effectively nothing wrong with Europe. UKIP see nothing right with it and just want to walk away in spite of our vital trading relationship. But I'm the only person who's saying, look, here's a plan for reforming our relationship, getting a better deal, and then giving you, the British people, the chance to decide in an in-out referendum whether you want to stay in a reformed Europe or whether you want to take a different path.
As you say, the Liberals, the Liberal Democrats, aren't with you on this. Mr. Clegg thinks that the idea that the French and Germans will let us pick and choose bits we like, as he puts it, is wishful thinking, and you're not actually going to achieve anything at all. And then he goes on to say, he said this to me in this studio last week, it's a curiously unpatriotic thing to say that in this globalised world of ours we should somehow turn our backs on the EU. Would you go along with the last bit of that?
Well, I put these things in my own way. I mean, what Nick has originally said, that my list of demands in terms of renegotiation was impossible and the whole of our membership would collapse and all the rest of it, and now he seems to be saying they're relatively modest. I suspect the truth lies somewhere in between. They are.
All right, but on this question of patriotism, he is a sceptic.
You are
trying to present yourself as being a sceptic. What he is suggesting, declaring, is that to be sceptical is to be unpatriotic.
No, well, I would put it a totally different way. You can be deeply patriotic and love your country and believe that its place belongs inside the European Union, or you can be deeply patriotic, love your country and believe you belong outside the European Union. Your patriotism is not defined by your position on this question. Your patriotism is defined by your love of your country, its institutions, its history, what it can do in the world. My argument is actually Britain will maximise our influence if we achieve a reformed position in the European Union that probably recognises the fact that for some European countries, they want the euro. They want to have an ever closer union. They want no borders in Europe. We don't want those things. We want to be in Europe for trade and cooperation, but we say no to the no borders scheme. We say no to the eurozone. Okay. We want to have our membership of this organisation to be about cooperation between nation states, not the building of a super state.
Okay,
I think, you know, what we're seeing in Europe since my speech at Bloomberg over a year ago is actually quite a lot of other European countries and leaders are beginning to take up some of these points.
All right, let's accept then that you are a true patriot. Here's a question for you, though. Are you a true conservative in the strict sense of the word? Well, we've got this referendum promised on Europe, which could change Britain enormously. Taking us out of Europe would be a phenomenal change to this country for decades to come, wouldn't it? Generations to come, maybe. We're also going to have another referendum very soon in September on Scotland, which could theoretically destroy a union that has lasted for 300 years. Makes you sound rather more of a radical or even a revolutionary than a conservative.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, look, there's a very simple point here.
Referendum in Scotland.
Yeah, but you can't hold people in an organisation against their will. Perhaps the best slogan the Conservatives ever had was trust the people. And that is what I'm doing on both of these issues. Scotland elected a Scottish National Party government and Alex Salmond as First Minister. They wanted a referendum. I think if I had said as Prime Minister, no, you can't have it, and if we'd had a two-year-long battle about whether or not Scotland had the right to choose its future, that would have been disastrous for the United Kingdom.
You could have done to delay it, like previous Prime Ministers have done.
Well, I think trust the people is a very good guide, and I think that the Scottish people should be able to decide whether they want to stay in the United Kingdom or whether they want to separate themselves from it. Now,
just
the encouraging thing, well, I think this is a deeply conservative view of life, that in the end you should trust people rather than bureaucracies and institutions to chart the right course. We started this conversation talking about people owning their own home. I want people to own their own home, to be able to spend more of their money as they choose, to have greater choice about where their children go school, to have control over their lives.
That's
a deeply conservative...
As to what you say when you meet Her Majesty the Queen for one of your weekly sessions, the one after the referendum vote, that says, maybe, we want out. And she says to you, Prime Minister, you've betrayed our nation, you've destroyed this union. What do you say to her?
Well, obviously, my conversations with Her Majesty
strictly private. This theoretical event when, I'm just intrigued because she'll have steam coming out of her ears, won't she?
Well, obviously, as I said, these conversations are strictly private, and I sometimes reflect, as I think one of my predecessors do, it's probably the only private meeting you have all week, which is one of the reasons I think Prime Ministers
are bad. But we can certainly make assumptions about her reaction to such an event, can't we? And you're going to find... you must have nightmares about that.
Well, I obviously am passionately committed to our United Kingdom, and I want Scotland to stay inside the UK. But as I say, I had a choice as Prime Minister to try and fight off a referendum threat by not allowing it, which I think would have been disastrous for the UK, or to do the right thing. Well, postponing would have been the same thing, John. I think that the Scottish people would have felt, hold on, this should be our decision. I think giving them a referendum, which is decisive, legal, fair, irreversible and binding, that is the right thing to do. Now, obviously, it's a vital debate. I was quite struck when in Scotland last week that every single school that has had a debate on the question of separation has voted to stay within the United Kingdom. My reflection, listening to the debate, is as soon as you get onto the issues about jobs, about prosperity, about security, people can see the advantages of remaining inside the United Kingdom, right, and let the debate continue.
OK, and a yes or no, you'd definitely not resign, whether or not it...
absolutely not. And I think it's important people know that, because the vote is simply about one thing. Does Scotland stay in the United Kingdom, or does it separate itself from the United Kingdom? It's not about anything else.
David Cameron, thank you very much.